welcome to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Dan Roth. Joining me this week is Zach Bowman.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And Jeffrey Ross.
Hello, good evening.
The Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by Tire Rack, the leading online source for tires and much more, such as wheels, wheel covers, windshield wipers, engine and brake fluids, lighting, and more. Shop Tire Rack at TireRack.com, and they're coming back on the show like in a couple of weeks. So check that out. And we'll start with the Autoblog Garage, and it's just going to go downhill from you, Jeff, so tell everyone what you're driving.
I'm in the 640i Grand Coupe that has been decked out with just about every individual feature that BMW offers, I think.
Oh, man, we should play the fun game of how much is this car.
We should.
Dan, you want to guess?
Wait a minute. Give us some of the ridiculous individual options.
It's got a $3,500 paint job.
Yes.
Oh, it's metallic. Awesome.
$8,300. Let's see, what individual composition. I'm assuming that's
don't
just.
Don't tell us the numbers. Just tell us what it's got. We're gonna guess here.
Oh, okay. Driver assistance package, luxury seating package, premium sound system, adaptive drive, integral active steering, wood inlay steering wheel. Ceramic controls, which are awesome.
Oh, come on. Ceramic controls.
And let's see. Heated front seats. Did I miss anything? Oh, 20-inch wheels.
$101,000.
I'm going to guess $101,001.
What is the showcase showdown? Thank you, Bob. Remember to spay and neuter your pets. Jeez, so what is it?
$104,695.
Oh, boom! Okay, anyway. That's a lot of money for a lot of crisis.
That's a pretty sweet car, though.
No, it's sweet, but I honestly wonder. And the weirdest thing about this car is it's almost set up to be like a chauffeured vehicle. Like, all the controls are in the back seat. And I mean, I don't understand why you would choose this over a 7 Series if you're wanting to get just driven around.
No reason.
Yeah, it looks better.
Yeah, but it's not as comfortable. Like, it doesn't have the big, tall roofline, and there's not as much leg room, I don't feel. There's definitely, it's a 5-seater, but there's absolutely no place to put the center seat legs. Like, the center console goes all the way up right to the back seat.
Those people don't matter.
No, it's for Jeff's amputee friends we were talking about last week. It's totally cool.
It is a blast to drive.
Really? Because I was going to say, I don't really find the 6, like, I find the 6 sort of clumsy feeling. It's just like, meh.
I would not have called this car clumsy.
It's quick, and it's big, and it just feels big, and I had the convertible, so there's also that prejudice working against it in my mind.
I would venture to guess this and the convertible probably might weigh about the same. Just, this has probably got more sheet metal to it. Extra doors, I'm sure, weigh a lot.
It probably behaves a little better than the convertible. Like, some of my complaints about the convertible was you could feel it flexing, although it was a solid car. I don't know. Something about it leaves me cold. It's definitely pretty.
See, that's another thing. I would not choose this over a CLS.
That is a difficult choice.
I'd take the 6 over the CLS.
Because, I mean, just styling alone, I mean, you get the first 3/4 of the car, like, you know, the front end and the roof line, that's perfect. The back end, it doesn't get me. I think the CLS, it's not the prettiest, especially up front, but the whole thing as a package, I think, is pretty good for this annoying 4-door coupe trend.
Yeah, see, I would say 6 coupe versus something else, the 6 coupe makes a very good case for itself. But against, now you've got the A7, you've got the CLS. Honestly, I think either of those.
Over the CLS or the BMW, to be honest. The A7 is a sweet machine.
I mean, if you're just looking for the looks, just buy a CC.
Done. Or a Kia Optima.
No, don't do that.
It's not a bad car. It's certainly not in the same class, but, you know.
I would take an Optima over a CC, I think.
Really? You're crazy.
Put that little turbo engine in there, and it gets 30 or 28 miles per gallon now.
Do they have potholes and expansion joints where you live, Jeff? Probably not potholes.
No, definitely not potholes. We have barrels and homeless people on the road.
One is more disturbing to hit than the other. I'm not going to say which.
The barrels cause more damage, actually.
Yeah. I know.
Almost, just turn on the wipers, right? I'm sorry, that's really rude, and we're going to get somebody writing in that we're cold and callous, and we're just kidding. I don't know how we went from the 640i Grand Coupe
to mowing down homeless.
To mowing down the homeless in a Kia Optima. So let's just move on then, and we'll talk about what Zach has in the Bowman garage.
I've got the new FX37. You know, when this car showed up, and it's always, I'm always pleasantly surprised by the Infiniti sort of crossover CUV things, because they're so much more like little hatchbacks than they are crossovers. They're fairly low slung, and I dig Infiniti styling. You know, a lot of people are saying it's kind of bulbous and sort of, you know, aquatic looking, like some sort of aquatic life form. But I think it's slick. Like driving it, you've got these big pontoon fenders that stick out, and like, yeah, a little chrome grille on the front fender is a little gaudy, and you know, it's got the sort of satin finish roof rails, which are a little gaudy too. But I don't care. Because it's rear-wheel drive, and it's got different. It is different. It feels more engaging to drive than a lot of cars in this segment. It's got the nice quilted leather interior. This one had the deluxe package, which meant it came with maple interior accents, which are super sexy.
And are we going to play a game of how much was this, or are you just going to tell us?
Go for it.
All right, so it had the technology package?
It had effectively everything you could throw at it.
Oh.
Except all-wheel drive, obviously.
Not all-wheel drive.
And it's the 37. Is it the FX37S? Do they have an S?
No, just 37.
I think that's just on the 50.
I'm going to say it was 62.
Jeff?
I will say 55.
Ooh, Jeff's the winner, 55. 800
with suck.
Destination and handling. And it had the premium package for $4,300 and the deluxe touring for $3,300 and the tech package for $2,950. And here's what kills me. God, freaking Infiniti. That stupid lane minder. You turn it off every time you turn the car off, right? So you turn the car on and you have to push the button and it's down by your knee. Right, so you're driving along and suddenly the car's beeping at you, so you have to look down like in the driver's side footwell to find the frickin' button to turn it off. Turn the car off, turn it back on, it comes on again. Every time. If I bought this car, the first thing I would do is figure out how to yank that blessed thing out. I swear, it's miserable.
I thought you could disable that globally.
No.
I bet you could go into the settings.
I bet you can't.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
I don't know.
It's lane departure warning and lane departure prevention.
LDW and LDP, and then you've got...
Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, just all the other...
Drive the freaking car, leave me alone.
Well, that's the thing about the FX. There's this panel that's hidden, but when you get in, you see it. Every time you get in this thing, you see it.
Well, it's all like Nissans are like that. It's like they insist on putting the freaking adjustments for the wing mirrors down at your knee. So you have to lean down to push the button, and you can't see where...
Which completely messes up the mirror.
I know! God of mercy, it drives me insane. It's like, does no one try this when they're building this car?
It's Infiniti and Nissan. It's their way of just adding a little levity to your life. Yeah. It's like the roulette of mirror adjustment.
I like the way the cars drive. It's just the one thing. It's just like a freaking thorn in my side every time I get one of these cars.
Isn't there a car where the controls are actually hidden? Because the Infiniti, they're just kind of down out of the way. But there's a car that it's in like this cubby bin that pops out. It might be Lexus.
Perhaps. Luxi, so I can say.
I don't know.
But yeah, otherwise, you know, the card drives well. All the, you know, infotainment stuff's easy to use. Just standard Infinity gear. I will say it has one of the worst freaking cargo covers of any vehicle I've ever had my hands on.
But that's okay, because you really can't get much cargo in it.
Right. Sure. No, you can get, like, two things. maybe one thing if it's, like, a box of cat litter. Otherwise, you're pretty much screwed. But, like, I was trying to get this thing out to take photos of the rear hatch area, right? And I'm trying to get it out, and I realize, like, somebody's already broken it at some point, probably in a fit of rage. And, like, I get to the point where I stick my head in the cargo area to try and figure it out, and I see the instructions are printed on the farthest panel, like, back towards the seat, upside down on this freaking panel. It's like, who did this? Or did someone just let a German engineer take care of the freaking cargo panel? I don't know.
That's the thing. Like, they want to be German, so...
It was so close to just Hulk smashing that blessed thing out of there and being like, I don't know what happened to the cargo cover. It's just not there ever in pieces on fire. So, yeah, that sucks.
I wonder what took them so long to put the 3.7 in that thing.
I don't know, because it's a great engine. Feels good in this thing. Feels like plenty of power. Like, I honestly could not imagine stepping up to the 5.0. Well, I certainly could, but there's no reason to. The 3.7's good.
Yeah, it's growly like a little coffee grinder is what everybody compares it to, and I never understand the metaphor or simile or...
Coffee grinders are unpleasant, and the 3.7 is pleasant, so...
Yeah, I like it. It's a growly little engine, and it has the 7-speed?
Yep, 7-speed auto.
So, overall, this is a vehicle that you would kick your horse out? To put in the garage or never? No.
Whoa.
Way.
Whoa. No. Yeah, I was talking to the wife about this because, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, I'm trying to envision a world where I would buy this, you know, personally. And I can understand the allure for buyers out there. I just think personally, I don't know, I probably would not wind up with something like this for nearly $56,000.
Yeah. I think I'd prefer to... Perhaps build that garage with a little.
Yeah. Yeah. Or have just like 10 $5,000 cars.
Yeah. You're working on it.
I know. We're getting there. Halfway there. That's not true. Most of my cars are not worth $5,000. Let's be honest.
But are they $5,000 like purchase price, or are they $5,000 what you could sell them for?
And purchase price are two different things.
That's entirely true.
Yeah. I like the way the FX styling looks. Like, it will hurt you if you sort of brush up against it. It looks sharp.
It looks menacing, you know, and like I said, it's got a cool hood profile from behind the wheel, and that hood is really long. It is a schnoz this thing has.
Yeah.
It gives it a little bit of purpose, and I don't know, it's cool. I dig it. I like it.
So do you think it can be... I always compare the Infiniti FX to the BMW X6, X5. Do you think that's still an apt comparison, or
totally different cars? I think the X5 at least has some sort of pretension of, you know.
Oh, it has lots of pretension.
Well, some sort of pretension of I can go off road and, you know, sort of do things. This is the FX is not that car. The FX is, you know, it's so close to a hatchback. It's like an inch of ground clearance away from just being a hatchback or a small wagon. I don't know. It's very different. It's a different driving experience. I mean, the X5 drives great. Just, I don't know. The X5 still strikes me as a lot more SUV than CUV, and I would certainly call this more of a CUV. So
it's a G37 wagon.
Exactly.
Which is
why I love it. Which is why, the EX true.
The EX smaller. Is much more like the, yeah. And you see, that's the weird thing, that the EX and the FX are not tremendously different under the skin. They're all sort of essentially the same, but and I like the fact that Infiniti is one of the very few cars you can find that diamond stitch leather on, because
it's so sweet.
It's nice looking. Yeah. it, doesn't really make any difference. They could be horrible seats, but they look good. And speaking of something that is not as nearly adventurous in terms of styling, this week I'm driving the Volvo S80 T6 all-wheel drive inscription package.
What does that mean?
It means it has perforated leather seats that are heated.
Does that mean it's a Volvo inside a Volvo? Oh, it's Inception, sorry.
No. No. It means essentially it's a $52,000.
What? I'm yeah. sorry, come again?
Right. So it's a lot of money for an S80. I mean, the S80, it's good looking, it's comfortable, it's quiet. And this has always been sort of Volvo's issue, right? Where they've every generation or so, they've made a model that tries to get to Mercedes. And they started with the 164 back in the day. That didn't quite get there. And then they had the 260s, which were the V6 2 Series. And they didn't quite get there. And then they had the 760s, which really nearly got there. And it's kind of been downhill from there. You know, this is kind of like that. It's like, if you're going to spend this kind of money, you're probably going to be happier with the way an Audi, a BMW, or a Mercedes drives. Because this, feels. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's luxurious enough.
No, it feels nice inside. It's just not on the same level. You know, I don't know. I mean, I always really dig on Volvo interiors. I think they're super sweet.
It is nice.
But
it's not that.
Yeah. No. It's not going to close that gap.
Well, you know? It isn't. I mean, it's certainly very.
Would I buy that over like a Lexus? Hell yes. I'd probably do that over a Lexus.
You know what? I don't know because I've been very smitten by the new GS.
The new GS is kind of going after Mercedes for once, but in terms of quality, but I do think that Volvo, especially the S80, has been like the in-between. Like you have your Cadillac and your Lincoln and your Lexus, and then you go, then you step up to the Volvo, and then above that you have your German luxury cars.
Yeah,
that's the way it's always seemed to me anyway.
It's in this middle ground is sort of evaporating though, right?
I mean, yeah, it's really hard going to sell a car that's sort of like a little bit better than, you know, your standard fare and not quite as good as your premium stuff. It's just like right in this middle place. It's got a lot of power. You know, the drivetrain I can't fault. But I just come away from this car going, okay, well, it's kind of like a Swedish Buick Lucerne. And that's not a good thing. You know, I mean, it's like...
I can see that on the ads. Yeah. Dan Roth of Autoblog.com says it's like a Swedish Buick Lucerne.
Well, no, but I mean, the Lucerne, okay, it was an attractive car, not adventurous in any way, but certainly not offensive. It was comfortable and, you know, well-equipped and quiet, and this is the same thing. You know, it doesn't live up to its potential. The suspension is just underdamped, and there is a sport suspension available, but apparently in Volvo land that means rock like so you know, they tune their suspensions apparently with Hyundai and Kia, so it's just, you know, for $51,000-$52,000, it gets a little bit sort of like, why would I do that? Why would I take on that payment? And then there's sort of the safety tech aspect of it, which, like you were talking about the lane departure stuff. Here's one thing that I hate. Just one for now. Swiveling headlights. And this car has...
Why do you hate swiveling headlights? How could that possibly confront you?
They are a distraction.
Oh, my sweet
Christ. And they are more crap to break.
Well, you better get ready for that, buddy, because NHTSA is pushing for them to be part of federal crash test standards.
You don't need swiveling headlights. You need to turn your head and look.
Well, then, if you look there and there's no light there, what are you doing? You're just distracting yourself from driving.
It's not where you're going. It's like the beam pattern. I never had a problem when I ran H4 housing, so I had a better non-DOT beam pattern in my cars. I never had a problem seeing stuff. And then swiveling headlights come out, which was like an answer to a question that nobody asked. I guess it's an answer to the question of like, how do you make crappy headlights less crappy and more failure prone?
I don't think it's the swivel part. I think it's the xenon part. Like, I think those advanced headlights have such a defined beam that it's like there's no dispersal. It's just like light and no light.
Well, but no, but see, the U.S. beam pattern is not that great. In Europe and stuff, it tails up to the right. So you're illuminating the side of the road where things like deer and stupid pedestrians are likely to be. And so you can see. So you don't really need a beam that swivels. And that's, I don't know. It's just me, I guess. I just see it and it just frustrates me.
So, I mean, it's on cars that I'd never afford and I would never buy used, so I'm not really all that worried about it.
My biggest issue really is that you can't permanently shut the damn thing off. Like, every time I get in the car and it's dark and I see the headlights move in the parking lot, I'm like, oh, you got to go into the menu and you got to stop it. And say, knock it off. And the parking radar stuff is the same thing. It's apparently freaked out by the bush at the end of my driveway. So I'm going to back out of my driveway, and it's just like, beep.
Danger.
Shut
there
up.
There is a shrubbery about.
Exactly. It's going to attack me and say, knee. Anyway, and I'm not a technophobe. I am not a technophobe. So it's just, if it's going to work, it's going to support me.
And in Dan's day, headlights were round, and that's the way we liked it, and that's the way we had it.
You know, if I, I'd love to fit some aircraft landing lights in the high beam position, so when you get those people that you drive around and they flash you like, hey, you've got your high beams on, you just hit them with that, because the landing lights have no actual focusing mechanism for, they're just light. They just blast light. Yeah. I wouldn't actually do that, because that's a good way to get somebody to drive into you. It's kind of like the go towards the light thing. That's what happens.
Pro tips by Dan Rose.
Exactly. How to dream of being nasty without actually being nasty. Anyway, we should move on, and we should talk about the Motor Trend car of the year, which may not surprise anybody, but I think it's still great. And it's the Tesla Model S. What say ye?
That's not a surprise. That car's been racking up awards left and right. It got Automobiles Car of the Year and did really well in a couple other other comparisons and sort of awards. It's a, you know, and it seems to be a cool car. It's got, you know, a lot of creative solutions to manufacturing and, you know, EV problems. I think its battery array is pretty clever. The fact that it has enough range to actually use like a car, and it's got the performance and styling to match. That's slick. We'll see if it advances the, you know, the EV conversation anywhere beyond, well, this was a cool car, you know?
Oh, I think it already has advanced that conversation, though. It's out there. It's real. It works.
But it's still kind of limited in who can have it. And I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people who have never even seen one.
I would have been more impressed if this had rolled out from a major automaker. You know, I think that would have been impressive. But the fact that it comes from I'm not disparaging what Tesla's done at all, because I think it's really amazing that they've, you know, stepped up and create this company. But at the same time, it still feels like a little niche boutique model. You know.
Yeah, but there's no way this would have ever seen the light of day at a major automaker. I mean, just look at it. Just look at the design. Like, those door handles, that the way they sort of fold out, that would have been like, oh, we're not going to spend that. We need to move the ground point from the radiator to the headlight bucket. And so the money for your door handles is gone. And like, Tesla didn't do that. It was just, it was a clean sheet car.
Sure.
And in the span of, what, however many years, they designed a real car. A real premium badass car. So
yeah, like I said, I'm not disparaging what they've done. I'm just saying, in terms of, you know, whether or not it moves the needle on the EV conversation at all, I think remains to be seen.
The whole lineup of cars that were up for Motor Trend Car of the Year, it just makes, I mean, last year was the Passat that won. I think just in this year, you can see how better cars have gotten. And any one of these cars could have won it. I think the Model S still means a lot to automotive history, almost. Just the fact that it is going to be talked about for a long time. So it makes sense that it won, for sure.
Yeah, well, I think that one of the things, if you watch the video that MotorTrend put out, it sort of pegged the needle in every segment that they evaluate the cars on, and I think none of their editors voted any differently. So it was a unanimous decision.
Yeah, I think it's the first time that's happened in the history of the award, isn't it?
It's certainly the first time they've given the award to a piston engine vehicle. I'm a non-piston engine vehicle. Wait a minute.
You're drunk. Go home.
I am not. I have a big coffee mug here, which is a very amusing Halloween cat. But, you know, I mean, the other cars in there were like, what was in the running, Jeff?
Well, Scion FRS was in there.
I know the Avalon.
Yeah.
Neither of those are groundbreaking in any way.
There's
you think the FRS is groundbreaking? What's wrong with you?
No, I think the FRS is a very good car, but I don't think it's groundbreaking.
I mean, there's the Boxster. Looks like a 911. Your GS.
Yeah, the 911 was in there again for no reason. The 3 Series was in there.
Well, the 3 Series and everything.
Accord. The ILX.
The ILX.
I'm just looking at the picture.
That's sort of like the odd man out. Okay. Yeah, so I can see out of this field that like they're all refreshed, and some of them are very good cars, but I can see how if you're looking for something that just is astounding in every criteria, yeah, it is the Tesla. And I think that's sort of the key, is where other manufacturers, especially big manufacturers, wouldn't take a chance because they have other lines to support. You know, they've got the, you know, General Motors has the Malibu, so it's like, well, we're not going to take from the Malibu to build some premium high-end thing that's not going to sell that much, and you know, yeah, we can fill it with all of our state-of-the-art technology, that's fine, but since Tesla had nothing else, they had to commit and commit big, and they had to pull it off, and so that's why I say this would never come out of any other place but a smaller company with like one product.
True.
So, I don't know that it's surprising, but I'm impressed with the car, and they should send me one so that I can complain about the headlight swiveling.
And then you complain about how big the center stack screen is.
Yeah, that's true. It is enormous. I hope there's a way to dim it. Do we know if there's a way to dim it?
I'm sure there is.
Because that's
like one of those big billboards on the side of the road, the LED ones that are so bright,
freaking things.
Yeah, those are like a flashbang grenade when you get near them and you're not expecting them.
You're going to be forced to live next to one of those. You just hang yourself. If somebody stuck one of those up next to your house, it'd just be like daylight, 24/7.
That's what rifles are for.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, okay. So we've gotten through that award, that car of the year. Let's look at the other award we're going to talk about, the rest of the world Ford Ranger, which...
It's a little bit of salt in the wound. You know what that is?
I know you want this thing, Zach.
I do want this thing. What? Jeff Ross?
I don't understand. I love the Ranger, the original Ranger. This thing has nothing to do with that except the name.
Well, that's true, but it's still an awesome little truck. I think it's pretty sweet. It'd be so expensive over here, but still, it's pretty cool. Powerful little turbo diesel, manual transmission. Come on. What is not to love?
So, Zach, here's the thing that's... You were speaking about hanging yourself. this vehicle was up
again. Are you suggesting I get to it?
No. Don't. Settle down. The three competitors in this field were the Isuzu D-Max, which, I mean, you can't even get Isuzus in the States anymore.
Sure.
And the Volkswagen Amarok.
Yep.
Now, all three of those are compact to midsize pickups with diesel engines.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is just like a collection of vehicles that must just make you weep for the fact that
From what I hear, the Amarok isn't the greatest machine in the world.
Since the man who drives Scouts.
Whoa. I think we're in a pot calling kettle black, Volvo Doctor. I think all of mine are functional at the moment. Thank you much.
Mine are just... I'm late.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Hey, anyway, moving on.
I had the front seats out. I had the center console out. I had the back seat out. I had the carpet. I did a lot.
All right. Anyway, I look at this award. It's the International Pickup Truck Award for 2013. And, those were the top three finishers. The Ranger took the first spot. The D-Max took second. The Amarok took third. And I think it's pretty telling that all of these are compact pickup trucks. We think of pickups in the U.S. as being the big three, the Ram 1500, the F-150, and the Silverado 1500. But the reality is those trucks aren't really all that popular outside of North America.
Yeah, our so pickup
Mexico,
trucks...
Mexico, U.S., and Canada, the rest of the world, they're perfectly content to bomb around in these little compact diesels or mid-sized diesels.
And the only one we get is the Toyota.
No, we get the Frontier.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get the Colorado again.
Thank God.
Which is an Isuzu.
That's true.
Which is also horribly old now, and the new one... looks horrible. So
no, it doesn't look bad. I like the Global Colorado.
I think this Ranger has nothing to do with the old Ranger, and I think that's what I've never been sold on this. It
towed a train.
Yeah, it's also like the old Ranger. The old Ranger was engineered in like 1979.
I know, and I love that about it. It was like a step up from the Courier.
No, because the Courier was a Mazda, so it was probably all around a better truck than the Ranger, except for it rusted to nothing within a year and a half.
Ranger's a pretty sweet little truck. Kind of indestructible.
I think we have a fundamental disagreement on this.
I don't know. I love 80s and 90s mini trucks.
I don't
just the S10, my beloved Comanche.
I had a hard body. I had a Nissan hard body.
Yeah, none of those I disagree with. That's for sure, but I think that our trucks here in the U.S. are sort of like the reverse of what is it, like pygmy dwarfism or something, where you get the island where there's not enough nutrition to make people 6 feet tall, so it's just like 6 feet tall.
I'm sorry, I thought you were going down an inbreeding tack there for a moment, which is also kind of true actually, because since we've isolated our market, all we have are these three dominating models, and we don't let anybody else come in place. There's no extra DNA to come in and spice things up and tell us how things should be done.
Well, that's not true. There's the Titan and the Tundra.
Like I said, there are no other outside models to come in. And
I think that's going to change, too. I mean, it might start on... I mean, trucks started as work trucks. So look at the work van side of it. It's all European now, except for Chevy.
There's the Envy.
That's true. The Envy is very American. How ironic is it that the Envy is probably going to be the most American in a couple of years?
The Envy is like funky, though. It reminds me of the days when the Japanese automakers would design stuff that looked like melted American cars, and talk about the American styling trends. The Envy just looks weird. It doesn't look like other market different like the Sprinter does. It just looks weird.
It looks like a pickup truck in a European van.
We're caught in like some horrible science experiment.
I'll tell you what, I wish that I had the money to do the SEMA project. I mean, like, one thing I've always wanted to build, like a Pro 4X NV tall roof, like a camper style,
like an expedition vehicle, basically. Yeah. Yeah,
like
that'd be awesome.
Like a much bigger Pinsgauer? Did I? Okay, never mind.
I think that's going to be our proper response for you from now on, is just dead silence. Just not say a friggin' word.
Crickets.
No, I just, I don't know that this is going to make anybody really want this truck here in the U.S. I think the people that want them will continue to want them, but I don't see how it's a product that really fits with this market, which is kind of a shame because it's still, I like small pickups. I love the Frontier. I could probably even find some fondness for the Colorado, sort of.
Colorado's a bad truck. Sorry, it totally is. I've got a buddy whose father bought one. It's just been a raging heap just since day one.
Well, I mean, I think that beyond the chicken tax, there's the other issue too. Like, it's expensive to bring one of those over, and who's gonna set up shop to build their compact pickup, which isn't gonna sell that much? You know, like, it'll sell some.
Nissan did it. Frontier's built right here, right down the road in Smyrna, Tennessee.
The Frontier and the Titan aren't that different, and I think their equation is more upside down. They knew that they probably sell more Frontiers than Titans.
They do.
Yeah, and but they
knew that. Which is not difficult. And it's like three, you know, Titans.
The Titan is the F Alpha platform, and the Frontier is also the F Alpha platform. So I think that's somewhat different. You know, that's like Toyota doing the same thing with the Tundra, but they did a much more full on assault and saw how successful that was. And that, I mean, that's a full size truck. So for somebody to come over and set up a small truck line, I don't know. I don't know if that makes that much sense. I don't think that it's not only that it would steal sales from a larger pickup if it were offered. It just, it wouldn't move.
It just cracks me up how manufacturers can think it's worthwhile to segment the SUV, CUV, and car segment market into just these tiny, tiny little slivers and think it's worthwhile. But the truck segment in the U.S. is just full-size trucks. That's all you profit. Get. You get shades of full-size trucks.
Profit.
I don't understand. Yeah, I understand profit, Dan. I get that. It's just, how can someone sell, to look at Ford and their SUV lineup. How many freaking SUVs do they have? 12? Somewhere around there? It's not 12. It's a lot. It's a lot of SUVs / crossover / CUVs, and it's all just this like continuum of vehicle space. And then in the truck side, it's Truck or van. Those are the two colors you get. Truck, you want truck, thing. You get truck. You want van, you get van. That is it.
You never see like the actual work trucks anymore, like a regular cab, long wheelbase, two-wheel drive, white with gray bumpers. You don't see that anymore.
No, it's because everybody's decided that they need a truck with
a $75,000 quad cab.
20-inch wheels. Yeah.
600 pound feet of torque to haul my two kids around in.
To the mall and back.
But I can't park anyway, and that's why my dually's fenders are always ripped off.
Well, you forget about them. When you go through the drive-thru, right, you forget about the dually fenders because, you know, the rest of the cab's not that wide. So you wind up getting your food and you pull away and there goes on the side of the McDonald's or whatever.
Happens. I do, man. They've gone to like these clean, quiet diesels. I miss the old Cummins 12 valve.
It's only because you've never traveled a long distance in one.
That thing I could hear from like 13 miles away.
You get out and your friggin' fillings are still vibrating, and you're like, "What the hell is happening?"
I don't think that's true either. People have figured out how to make modern diesels. Well, maybe not the stuff that takes the after treatment fluid, but right up to that point, I've been behind a lot of trucks that are just loud with aftermarket sewer pipe exhaust, and every time the throttle gets rolled on, it's this cloud of black particulate matter.
It's like the sixth week in a row you've bitched about,
but that's the
diesel
new
trucks.
No, makes that, me angry.
That's like the new coffee can muffler from the 90s that people would stick on their Eclipses. The new cool thing is to somehow tune your truck to
be a complete jerk truck.
Yeah. Well, there's that video where the guy rolls up next to the girl and says, "Do you smoke?" And then he punches the gas and covers her in exhaust, which is hilarious.
You liked that, did you?
It was funny. How was that not funny?
Because it's being... Oh, I just want to curse. Let's move on. Let's just and then there's the poorly maintained ambulances that I get behind, and that's a local thing here, and I'm just like, oh no, it's that company, I'm gonna die. It's a good thing they're driving an ambulance in front. So significantly though, the 2013 Honda Civic has been shown to us, and there's also new hybrid systems and a teeny tiny micro commuter concept, which just looks an awful lot like a gem. to me from Honda. So there's life at the house of Honda.
Well, the new Civic looks good. You know, I wasn't particularly upset with the way the old one looked, more so, you know, the fact that they just sort of softened it to the point of numbness and the interior looked like it was a patchwork quilt instead of a single cohesive design. So I want to see how it looks inside. I want to see how it drives, you know.
Yeah, well, those are all important things. I do think that the 2012 Civic isn't bad looking, but this is a lot better looking. I mean,
much better.
Yeah.
There's a lot more accord in this one.
Yes, and that's a good thing.
No, I agree. No, it's 100%.
There was like a lot of Saturn SL in the other ones.
But it will be interesting to see the inside of the car. I think that's what a lot of people I knew had problems with the Civic.
Yeah, and that's always going to be the sort of the key is if they haven't screwed up the interior, because, you know, like I say, the outside looked like a Saturn SL, the inside looked like an 88 Cutlass. It was just
It was far worse than an 88 Cutlass. Like I say this as a former Honda diehard fan. It just, I don't know. It's just it makes you uncomfortable to be in. There are so many lines going on and so many little pieces of plastic all butted up against each other. And the weird, like, two-tier dash thing, that's not effective in any way.
I bet you that's still there.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be there. They would not have walked away from that. I guarantee you it's not.
It looks like the biggest thing, it's all, like, the little pieces that they could replace, like the fascias, the wheels. So I'm guessing on the inside it might be, like, new materials on the steering wheel and shifter and maybe, you know, new colors on the gauge cluster. I mean, just guessing, but...
Well, I mean, Chrysler has shown us that if you pull off an interior redo very
people
well...
People will buy the Chrysler 200.
Yeah, I mean, it can be done. It's probably just as expensive as a full redesign. I mean, I do think it's cool that Honda reintroduced the yearly styling change. I don't expect this to stick around, but...
What did they say? Somebody said the 2012s will be a unique footnote and collector's item.
Yeah, have fun collecting that. People collect weirder things. I mean, there's somebody out there who really wants a Chevette scooter diesel. So
S60s, for example.
I don't collect them so much as they come here to die. Well, I mean, you know, the big deal is going to be the interior, though. And that's, I mean, because despite all of what we've complained about also, Honda has managed to sell nearly 40% more of these this year.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, Consumer Reports was like, oh, this is a horrible car. Don't buy this car. And nobody cared at all.
People were like, well, how bad could it be?
It's still a Civic.
And I think for the majority of people who bought them, they either just didn't consider anything else or they didn't care. And that's
possibly
valid.
Both.
But, you know, I'm going to want to know, and we're going to get to see this car on the 29th of November at the LA Auto Show. And Honda says that it's not just another pretty face. Their words are that they've made a host of safety, featured comfort, chassis, and interior styling enhancements that will further define the Civic as the best car in the compact class.
Damn.
I think I'd like to be the judge of that. Like the unanimous judge. Your opinion, you can have it, but I would like to be the judge of whether it's actually
go for it
the best car in the class. Because when the 2012 hit the web too, I remember being on this very podcast talking about how I didn't think the new interior was that bad, and that, my friends, is how dangerous it can be to look at a picture and form an opinion, because
man,
the interior
in that car,
oh, it is that bad. You know,
I remember when they did the launch of the 2012, I was sitting at dinner with the freaking guy who designed the interior. He was like, "What did you think of the car?" And I was this salad is great. I'll be honest with you, it's fantastic.
It's an open bar.
Yeah, right. I'm not nearly hammered enough to have this conversation with you.
I sometimes feel bad for those people.
Well, you know, it's always easy.
They have to know deep down inside it's not a good product.
They know because they benchmark everything else. So they're like, well, so
I don't know. Occasionally you get those guys who are just, you know, blind. You know,
I'm talking at the Ford Taurus launch when they said this thing's as nice as the Audi A6. The new Taurus is great, but it's not Audi great.
He's out of his mind. Who said that?
That's what they were comparing it to. Like, if you go back and look at their press release, I'm sure Audi A6 is mentioned somewhere in that
release. Did they see all the Detroit guys too? They're like, the Audi A6, and you're like, it's Audi. Everybody from GM and Ford pronounces it Audi, and you're like, what's up, guys? You could go to Audi's press site and see people saying Audi. You can see Germans saying it, and they don't say Audi, they say Audi. It's like your belly button, please. But you find all kinds of interesting benchmarks in the automaker press release, and I think what they do that because it's an aspirational thing. They want to position the car as like not anywhere near this class. You know, we don't want to talk about its direct competitors. We don't want to talk about the Dodge Dart when we talk about the Civic. We want to talk about the whatever, the BMW 1 Series or something. But I don't know. I mean, I think that this car, once it gets in our hands, we'll figure out very quickly whether they've done a good enough job. And it can be done. Like I said, with Chrysler, I was impressed, very impressed, at the way they turned those rotten, awful, terrible interiors around. So we'll move on, but first, Zachary, hit it.
The Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by Tire Rack, the leading online source for tires and much more, such as wheels, wheels covers, windshield wipers, engine and brake fluids, lining, and more. Shop Tire Rack at TireRack.com.
Wheels covers?
Wheels?
Wheels? Wheels? Wheels accessories?
Wheaten.
Wheels and wheels covers.
Also the wheels covers in the world.
So, 2014 Ford Mustang.
No!
The Boss 302. Speaking of vehicles that will be rare and unique collector's items.
Yeah.
I mean, is it official? I mean, everyone's saying that the Boss 302 is not going to be back because it's not on these order guides. Does that mean it's official? Have they said it's not coming back?
They said when they launched it that it was going to be a two-year-only thing, right?
Did they?
Oh, there go the crickets again. Damn it, you guys.
No, I'm not going to say I don't know.
Yeah, I don't recall that.
I looked at these and I'm like, well, maybe there's probably going to be a lot of things that aren't on this order guide.
Yeah, well, but their statement says, like the original from 43 years ago, this version of the Mustang Boss 302 also is limited to just 2 years, which concludes at year's end and as Ford initially promised. That's from Craig Deitch at Ford, so I probably mangled his name. So there you go. If you can't find one, you're not going to get the 444 horsepower Mustang right now.
And gotta have it green. That's the one I would get.
School bus yellow. I believe that color goes away. But looking at the order guides, there's not much change either. It's just mostly like colors and some option package business. And then there's the GT500 that gets heated seats, standard, marvelous. If you buy the GT500 and don't get the Recaros, you are a fool.
That's true.
I like on the regular Mustang, there's the new Kreger style wheel. Wheel?
Is it a wheel or a wheels cover?
The thing that, you know, when I go back and forth with Zach about this, because he'll show me stuff on Craigslist, and I'll be like, yeah, but it's got those wheels, the giant, giant wheels now that everybody's into, and it just looks out of place and out of proportion on 70s cars and stuff. And so to scale up like a torque thrust even, it just doesn't look right at 19 or 18 inches. It's just the design doesn't work for me. That's, again, probably just me, and here we go with the crickets. But
yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm fine. I mean, I grew up going to enough car shows where you just sort of accept it. It's like seeing the sky. You're like, well, there's the sky again.
when are we going to go back to, like, 14 and 15-inch wheels?
The hybrids cometh, brother. Don't you worry.
Yeah, I kind of like some of the large sidewall bit in the winter. That's certainly nice because those teeny tiny sidewalls now. Yeah. But getting back to the Mustang, because we're completely off track, I think the nicest thing about this is you can get the V6 with the sport package and like all the GT gear, and it's got as much power as, say, the GT. It's got more power than a GT that was the same year as, say, your Project Ugly Horse.
Yeah, by a lot.
By a lot.
Yeah, I think 300 horsepower in the early 90s was, what, a Ferrari?
Yeah, it was huge.
It was like 400 horsepower in the early 90s, Ferrari.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the V6 is a sweet little car, but man, that 5-liter is the money. And I realistically, no one ever needs the kind of grunt that the 5-liter is putting down. You know,
everybody needs that.
I'm getting there, just driving around, but I can't imagine buying the V6 and then looking at myself in the mirror every day and going, I didn't buy the V8 because, man, that engine is phenomenal.
It is, but the V6 doesn't suck.
Oh, no, it doesn't suck.
And so you get the V6 with the manual and the handling package and the extra nice stuff inside. All of a sudden,
you cry yourself to sleep every night because you didn't buy the V8.
But it handles better. It doesn't.
It doesn't handle quite
as much like a pig.
That is not the GT isn't necessarily a pig. I think it's hands down the best handling of the three muscle cars.
Okay, so the V6 with less weight should handle better. Should.
I would imagine the weight difference between the V6 and the V8 is not substantial.
I think we're going to have to go to the research.
I think it's more of a price thing. I don't know. Do they still do insurance based on engine sizes?
Oh,
yes.
Actuarial tables, the yin-yang. I'm sure that they've got plenty to do.
So yeah, I'm sure it's more of a cost thing than a fuel economy or a performance thing.
Well, I think it's probably a combination of all of that, because I'm going to say that to make myself sound smarter.
Probably some numbers and math is what it is.
But I think, though, you could have an awful lot of fun in the V6. And at least they don't just... It's not... Okay, back when your Mustang was in 88, right?
89.
Okay, so you could get it one of two ways. You could get the GT, or you could get the four-cylinder, which was a suck-ass four-cylinder lame car with 185, 65...
You're just all about dumping on me.
I'm teasing you, that's all.
That'll be fine.
Huh? You can give it back anytime.
No, it's fine. I wouldn't do a thing like that.
Oh.
Picking a man's vehicle. I'm elevated. I'm good to go.
I like the Mustang. I have a soft spot for Fox body vehicles. We've discussed this.
Yeah, weird, twisted, horrible. Anyway, continue with your point.
Fairmont ESO.
Ugh.
Awesome. Nauseous. Awesome. Nobody believes me. Whatever. But at least now, you know, when you bought the four-cylinder Mustang back in the day, or the V6 Mustang when it was SN95, you didn't get much. You didn't get much fun, for sure. You couldn't get the extra handling package. You couldn't get the good tires. You couldn't get any of the appearance upgrades. You can get some of them, but not like leather and all that stuff. So you can get like a fully equipped V6 now.
Anybody want to guess what the weight difference is between the V6 and the GT manual?
40 pounds.
200.
It is less than 100.
Yeah. I figure it's going to be something that made me sick.
It's like 80 to 90, somewhere around there.
But the V6 is further back, right? It's not as...
I think that V8 is right at the front axle line. I'm pretty sure. It's pretty far back there.
Yeah. So, fine. Buy the V8. It sounds phenomenal. It has lots of power.
It'll make you so happy.
Yeah.
See, I mean, if you go back to the original Mustang, there's always been that kind of base non-performance model that's just fun to look at. But I think the new V6, it's not like that. I mean...
It's a performer.
I mean, right out of the gate, it's a fun and fast car. You don't have to drive it that way, but...
Most people don't.
You don't have to sacrifice it either. You don't have to say, oh, I went with the four-cylinder version.
Yeah.
I think that we just don't like the four-cylinder Mustang. It's basically what it works out to. And we're okay
with
the base V6 Mustang. And now I think you are going to prove us all wrong, because I think a four-cylinder Mustang with an independent rear end sounds like a lot of awesome to me.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with the next-generation Mustang. I mean, Ford has all but said that a Turbo 4 is coming to that car. So, you know, if they can crank out the sort of numbers that they're putting out in the Focus ST with that EcoBoost, I don't see any trouble with that being in a Mustang. 270 horsepower?
Yeah, that's not too far off of where they are, and it may actually have a better torque curve.
Right, so why not? I'm perfectly okay with it. Especially if it's a smaller, lighter car. Rock and roll.
Yeah, from what we've seen with the mules, it's definitely going to have independent rear suspension. It almost looks like the engine bay shrinks, so my assumption is that actually the exterior might shrink, or certainly change enough to cause some of that, because right now the car is kind of blocky, and it's the lightest of the pony cars, but that's not really meaning that it's a light car. It's actually not as heavy as you might think, but...
I wonder what the 370Z weighs.
I forget.
Probably close to GT range. I'd say it's around there.
The Mustang just poops all over the Z, though.
Yeah, in every way.
Oh, the Z probably in terms of chassis. It's a better sort of scalpel in that sense. But I think just every other way, the Mustang just annihilates the Z.
True.
So, you know. Go with the Z if you want to have sort of an ersatz Cayman, but don't go with it because it's a good performance car, because it's not for the money. But it's different, and we like different. And we should move on to the questions.
Questions!
Yeah. So, let me pull up this first question here. I think it's a very good one for us to answer, especially as I head towards middle age. Reader asks, is there a fun car out there for the husky gentleman? I should lower my voice a little to read this so I can sound more husky. I'm not going to do that. I'm 6'5" and over 300 pounds, and I like small, fun cars. My heart aches when you guys talk about what fun the Miata is, but unfortunately, it's more of a shoe to me. Is there any hope?
The car we were just talking about, man, a Mustang's pretty good sized inside, and it's a lot of fun. It doesn't drive like a small car necessarily, but it's still pretty enjoyable. I mean, it handles really well. It's got a lot of power. Like Dan was saying, the V6 is a blast. You know, the Ford has done a really good job of moving that car away from, you know, the big-bodied muscle car side of things and more towards the sports car side of things. And I think that's what a lot of people miss out just by looking at the car. So, you know, I'd check that out. That's a good way to go. Anybody else?
I mean, in that line of thinking, if you're looking for a lot of space and still performance, I mean, the Challenger, it's not...
That's not a small car.
That is not a small car.
No, it's not a small car, but it's still... It's fun and fast.
Golf, GTI.
Yes,
it's got a lot of room inside. It's a lot of fun.
GTI on my list. I have the Focus ST, Subaru WRX or STI. All of those are rather fun.
Yeah,
you could spend a lot of money and get yourself a 1 Series or a C63 AMG. That seems like its very own special brand of riotous fun.
Yeah, if you've got all the monies, why not?
It's not
like unlimited budget now.
Well, the C63 AMG is not that expensive.
It's not that cheap either.
No, but it's like $60,000+. It's not my money. It's this guy's. So there's that. I mean, the Mustang always seems to have, for me, it's kind of like a loose fit feel. The Infiniti G Cooper sedan doesn't suck either. So there are some options. I tend to think that if you're looking for a small, fun car, you're not looking for an expensive, small, fun car.
Right.
So, Focus ST, because it just beat the GTI in a comparison. We should wind back a little bit, though, because we didn't talk about the Honda hybrid stuff. And I wanted to ask you, Zach, did you actually drive a hybrid when you drove the Accord?
Yeah, for like 3 minutes, maybe. It was, yeah, we don't need to talk about that.
It was hybrid-y?
I mean, the car itself was fine. It's just the situation leading up to me getting into driving the car was not fine. In that 3 minutes, it felt like a car. I'm not really informed enough to talk about it, and that's why I didn't write anything about it in my review. So,
well, they've released details along with their, and I mentioned this, so this is why I'm going back to it, because we moved on without talking about it. They just released details about the three different but related hybrid systems, the latest technologies under the Earth Dreams umbrella. And so they take hybrid. I mean, when you think of Honda Hybrid, what do you think of?
Insight.
And do you generally come up with some sort of expletive? Because
it's more of like an uneasiness in my gut. It's one of those. It's like when you look at roadkill, and you're like, ugh.
Okay, so basically, it gives you an ew face,
right?
So hopefully, these will sort of unscrunch your scowl. They're going from the single IMA architecture that didn't have as much traction to three different ways of getting electrons and molecules to work together. And so it looks like they cover a range of sizes too, because what might be ideal for, say, a small car doesn't work as well for something larger. So they're going from the IMA that sandwiches the electric motor in between the transmission, and they've got a pair of systems that use a dual clutch gearbox, which, hooray for that, because it's one less CVT that the world has to put up with. And there's one with three motors, which we actually saw Honda Accord Mule that had the system, and it's going to be in the new RLX. So it's got two motors in the rear that can torque vector, and then it's got another one up with the motor. And then there is the smaller system with a single motor that ties with the Atkinson Cycle 1.5 liter engine, and they say that it's up to 30% more efficient than other one-motor hybrid systems. So all of that is to say, if somebody can make a hybrid not suck, could it please be Honda?
And their track record
is not good.
Does not point to that. God have mercy.
And so are you going to be the magic eight balls? Like, ask again, or
yeah, try again later.
One thing they mentioned in their press release, it sounded like they're going to maybe build like that, use the same system and make plug-in and not plug-in versions of the same hybrid.
Well, that's the one that's going to be in the Accord.
Yeah, so are they going to make a non plug-in hybrid Accord?
I don't think so.
That's a good question. I don't know.
It says that sport hybrid, super handling, all wheel drive. I bet you that's what we're going to see in the NSX, right? That's what's going on.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking as I looked through it. I was like, okay, well, they're going to debut it in the RLX, and they're going to work it out, and then it's going to be sort of a field trial for the stuff that ends up in some form in the NSX, because you know they're going to take their V6 and put it in the NSX.
Right.
No complaints there. But a hybrid NSX still have me shaking my fist.
Just crying a little bit.
Yeah, especially when I see pictures of the old NSX, and I know.
It's like so damn good.
And they built that up to 2005. I didn't know it was built that long.
Yeah, but then it got ugly with the exposed headlights. And
no, I'm okay with the exposed headlights.
I don't know. The later years, it just didn't do it for me. The different taillights.
Hey, Jeff, none of us are that good in old age. I mean, I'm getting there. I was better when I was younger, too.
You're already there mentally. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn!
You know, I think the NSX is a lot like a Pantera, too. Try to find one without the most awful wheels and body kit applique garbage on it, and you'll spend a lot.
Yeah. There's one here in Jacksonville. It's got, like, this fake... I hope it's fake. Carbon fiber everywhere.
Would you give them more respect if it wasn't fake? Probably.
What? It'd be very expensive.
You spent a lot of money, sir.
Stupidly, but hey, it's your money. But you know, the hybrid thing is going to come to a head. As much as we want to scream and kick and complain about it, apparently they're just going to keep developing it until we don't care anymore.
Or they go bankrupt from people not buying their shitty hybrids. One of the two.
Well, I think that they're working on making them not that way.
Is this like a third time's a charm sort of scenario? Because you've got the insight, which is a huge swing and a miss, and you've got the CRZ, which is... No. Yeah, the first one was fine. I would own a first-generation insight, because
it was
cool,
just straight-up weird, and it had a three-cylinder, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a cool little...
And you can change the manual.
And it got ludicrous mileage, and it had a lot of really, really innovative, creative engineering behind it.
And then it got its clock cleaned by the Prius.
Well, yeah. And then Honda was like, oh, wait, this hybrid thing's sort of catching on. We should build the Insight, but it's going to be worse than the Prius in every way. Why isn't this selling? I don't understand.
Let's build another one.
Why isn't this selling? I don't understand.
Hey, let's build a CRZ.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. The CRZ, I hope they make a CRZ with some flavor of new hybrid system that's
just
much more...
No, satisfying. Just put the freaking K20 in the car. That's all you have to do to make that car not suck. Why won't you do it, love of Christ?
Wow.
That is it. It's so freaking obvious. Ugh. Christ of mercy. It's all because they wanted to shove that stupid hybrid system in there for no apparent reason. Zero reason. Or just a D. Put a 1.5D in there and just be happy. Just be happy. It'll have power. It'll get great fuel efficiency. But no, you want the IMA.
They had to do something with them. Nobody was buying the Insight.
Set them on fire.
Hey, they have batteries. You could probably arrange that pretty easily.
Lithium fire would be awesome.
All right, so for even more levity, the Honda micro commuter concept. To me, it looks like they've designed a neighborhood electric vehicle. But
Boca Raton, here we come.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see a lot of gems in those like gated retirement communities? Like,
well, that's all that's down there. And in Central Florida too, there's areas.
Do they have?
It does have the exact same wheels as the Accord plug-in.
Do they have gems that have like a trailer on them that you can like drive your rascal up on?
That would be hilarious.
Your hover round.
That's your $1 million idea right there, Dan. You better get on that.
I'm all done now. But I think the biggest story with this is the variable design platform, where it's sort of like a skateboard concept, and you can just plug different pieces onto it. So,
best comment on Autoblog Green is the first one. I would not want to drive this for fear of being bullied and intimidated by hooligans driving Scion IQs.
Having just driven a Scion IQ,
so
you're not bullying anybody in that car.
I don't know. You know, as they say, refuse rolls downhill. So
very good.
Yeah. Although, who's ever driving this will embarrass Mitsubishi iDrivers.
Yeah, there's just some skinny tires. What are those, you think?
Those are trailer tires. Those are. You can get them from, I don't know where you can get them.
Up to 50 miles an hour is a 60-mile range. Who buys this?
Well, it's certainly not a vehicle for...
Tell me people in Manhattan, Dan. Tell me people in Manhattan want this car.
The hilarious thing is they're like, well, we're trying it out with different uses to verify the potential of the vehicle, including supporting everyday short-distance transportation for families with small children. Like, I'm not putting my kids in that thing.
Families with pocket-sized children.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, look, we have a miniature child.
I would like to see them try and shove a freaking car seat in the back of that thing. I would like to see it happen.
It's not for this market. It's for the Japanese market, where wacky sells. What I really want them to do is that N1 thing that looked like the...
Oh, yeah.
600?
No, they made those.
Yeah, bring those here.
And would not sell.
Oh, come on.
Did you see the Mugen version? It was cool.
Yes, I saw the Mugen version. That's automotive hilarity right there.
I would rock the pants off that. I think it's cool.
Rock the pants.
Yeah. So let's go back to the questions now.
Okay.
Because I completely screwed that up, but that's okay. Winter's coming. I'm in the Northeast. Should I always go for an all-wheel drive car, or is rear-wheel drive with winter tires okay as well? I want the rear-wheel drive sports cars, but I need to be safe during winters as well.
Depends on how careful a driver you are. You can put winter tires on all four corners and just be very careful and mind what you're doing, and you'll be just fine.
Word. Because I said... Well, what do you say about winter there, Jeff? Winter, that's when it goes down to like 50 degrees.
No, it gets cold here. I'm in North Florida.
Okay, so
it gets into the teens for
he's in Georgia.
A couple days.
At night.
Yeah, and then it still gets in like 30s during the day. This is like a week in January. Where okay.
You got to break out the hat.
Yeah, and gloves, or just stay in the house. No, I mean, the way I've driven cars... let's see, a couple of years ago, I was in town for the auto show, and I think they put me in a rear-wheel drive Charger, and I did not have a problem with that. I mean, it was just, I hadn't driven...
Actually, it's quite an interesting point. Like, have you had any... Did you transplant to Florida, so did you know how to drive in the snow and that kind of stuff before?
Or? Yeah, but it's been 10 years. I mean, it does lose its value when you have to keep remembering, oh, this is probably icy road.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had no problem with the Charger. It's not like I had to baby it or I felt like I was getting out of control. I think the way, you know, traction control and stability control, I think that's making up for a lot of ground that, you know, a car in the 80s with rear-wheel drive, you just get stuck.
And it's also, you know, it pays to keep in mind if you're buying a car like that, make sure it's got a limited slip of some variety. Because that's what will take the wind out of your sails pretty quick if you've got an open differential in the back.
Yeah, you used to see cars at stoplights where they're just like you could just take your foot off the brake and just that one wheel would just spin real slowly. Car just went nowhere. You'd just be like, all right. But a lot of rear-wheel drive cars now have lockers, like electronic lockers, so they just lock the spider gears together and away you go. I mean, they've gotten a lot better with traction control and stuff that covers up a lot of badness, but it's not even half about the car. It's mostly about the driver, and I think like all-wheel drive, it gets you moving in some situations. There are places where it is kind of a prerequisite, further up in New Hampshire and stuff, where you've got your driveway that's very steep and windy and stuff. You're not going to get up that in a vehicle with just winter tires. Sometimes, you know, you do need all four wheels to be driven, but it's mostly you. You know, certainly, even an all-wheel drive car can benefit from having winter tires. It'll help you if you have just all seasons, but you should definitely... There's actually videos at the Tire Rack, and you should check them out, because they did a bunch of tests with BMWs in an ice rink, and they're like, here's the summer performance tires. The thing just goes right off the apex. And then they did the all seasons, and it still went through the cones, and then they did the winter tires, and it was like, no problem. So,
I always love going to hockey games where they drive the car on the ice. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, really? I always wanted to drive a Zamboni.
You could probably make that happen.
ZamboniBlog.com.
Zamboni, power on.
What exactly was that?
nobody was a Celebrity Deathmatch fan. Vanilla Ice versus Ice-T. Come on.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, man,
old
you are
school there.
Out.
Yes, I'm aware of what it was.
I've blocked all that out of my memory.
Well, you should unblock it because it's hilarious.
I was probably busy being an adult at that point. So, we had another question. What is the best... And you'll like this one, Zach. What is the best possible speed to drive to achieve the best possible highway mileage?
Well, it depends on the vehicle and it depends on gearing. I would probably say 55 to 65, somewhere around there, depending on the car.
I think it's been... I think 62 is the right answer.
Cool. I was in my window. I'm totally fine with that.
But no, there was
the average of the two numbers.
When this thing I've been doing lately, instead of, you know, if we go on a road trip, instead of taking the interstate, we do navigation and avoid interstates. And it takes you through these cool little back roads. And most of the time, it's a divided highway at 55 miles an hour. And you get so much better fuel economy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you get there at the...
drop speed like that. And that's one of the whole reasons why, you know, America had the 55 miles an hour speed limit for the longest time, an effort to sort of shaft it to OPEC.
Yeah, well, hey, in a few years, we're going to be completely energy independent, says the IEA. So, yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. But I think, though, the thing that we don't want to tie to, like, there's no way you can reduce maximizing fuel economy to a single factor like speed. So I'm not going to actually give an answer because you guys have taken very credible stabs at it.
But you're wrong.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying you're wrong. You're absolutely right. Driving slower will get you better fuel economy in pretty much anything. And some cars are more efficient than others at sane speeds that don't turn you into a roadblock. You know, if you drive 62 on some of the highways in this nation, you will get run over.
Right. Well, I'm not saying go 62 on the interstate.
So that's the highway.
No, I'm talking like a highway, like a four lane. I don't know the roads up there, but you know, not an interstate, just the state highways. You guys don't have those up there?
I mean, we have state highways, but they all tend to be like 65 mile an hour limits, and
they're 55 to 65 here.
If you go too slow, you get crushed. It's New England. We don't like stuff.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know how you New Englanders drive. It's Florida. You guys come down here for the entire winter.
These are the old ones. Okay. And usually the ones that go down there are not the good ones. We stay here because we like snow.
You guys send your old ones for the winter and your young ones for spring break. So.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Jersey Shore.
I am not Jersey Shore. Thank you. I'm further north. Far, further. It takes me forever to get to the Jersey Shore. I remember that trip. You'd hit Newark and you'd be in traffic for 2 hours. There's coefficient of drag. There's frontal area. There's gearing. There's tires. There's the condition of your vehicle, like dragging brakes and stuff. So it's a system of it's a system comprised trade-offs. That's my engineering answer. So
Stan's way of saying he doesn't know.
I don't know, but I think that there's a lot of different factors involved. It's always going to be those people that are like, well, pump up your tires. And you're like, yeah, so pump them up too much and they wear funny. So you got to be careful with that. But I think we have done a credible job of winding up the podcast. We have one more sponsor message from Mr. Ross.
The Autoblog podcast is brought to you by Tire Rack, the leading online source for tires and much more, such as wheels covers, windshield wipers, engine and brake fluids, lighting, and more. Shop Tire Rack at TireRack.com.
All right. So, you guys know where to hit us up at podcast@autoblog.com. You can leave us some feedback on iTunes. I don't know if we've worked out our downloading problem yet on devices. I know we have been working on it. I will ask soon to see if that's been resolved. And you can also just leave us comments on the podcast post. And we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.
See you guys.
Adios.